This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Warmth himself, Don Rickles.
Don Rickles has been a nightclub comic for more than 50 years, relying on a mostly ruthless barrage of observations and insults. He's waited until now, at age 81, to publish his memoirs, which tell of his days with Frank Sinatra, Johnny Carson, Bob Newhart, and other famous friends. In 2007, when Don Imus can lose his job for an ethnic and sexist slur that some people found indefensible, it still can be startling to hear what Don Rickles got away with in his prime. And the laughs he got from his jokes mining stereotypes about African Americans, Jews, Mexicans, Poles, homosexuals, and women. If you're Scandinavian, you're safe. Here he is in 1968, almost 40 years ago, reacting to certain members of his audience in Las Vegas.
I'm a Jew with a chosen people. We don't have to do nothing. Pick up a couple of dollars and phone God. Hello, God. Jews, you got to be like the Jews. Just sit in the house in the living room in your underwear. Put on the TV, Shirley. Bah. That's all Jews do. Sit in the underwear, belch, and watch TV. The Irish guys are staggering around. The color guys are going, glory, glory, hallelujah. And the Mexicans, I'm going to the toilet. I don't care what the color guys do. And the queers are going, let's go in the park and have a love out. These are the jokes, lady. If you're waiting for Billy Graham to come in here, forget about it. At the finish, I give out dirty pamphlets. You gotta be a Jew, lady. You're the only one with a stole on, and it's 105 in here, for crying out loud. You're either a Jew or an old beaver in heat. Is she laughing? Take a look. Ah, it doesn't matter.
Don Rickles' new book, co-written by David Ritz, is called Rickles' Book. Don Rickles, welcome to Fresh Air.
Thank you, Dave. Nice to be here.
You start the book with a great anecdote about the time that you got up the nerve to ask Frank Sinatra to come to your table and say hello to impress a date.
What it was is that the punchline is I was with this. I was in my single days. I'm married 42 years. I don't want to blow it now. I was with this young lady. It was I thought would be an easy mark for me, and we had this evening, and we went to the Sands Lounge, and she was all dressed up and, you know, kind of a good kid, but not my cup of tea for life, let's put it that way. Mm-hmm. And Frank Sinatra was over at the other side of the lounge. In those days, they had walking violins, strolling violins, and they had the caviar and, the flaming things for hors d'oeuvres. It was really plush. Today, it's not like that at all. Anyway, so I was sitting there with her, and she said to me, oh, this is a lovely evening, she said, is that Frank Sinatra over there? And he was there with some couple of security officers and some Lena Horne, I remember, and some other stars of that caliber, and mm-hmm. all sitting with him, and Dinah Shore. And she said, do you know Frank Sinatra? I said, are you kidding, sweetheart? It's like a brother. What? Don't be ridiculous. Of course I don't. Because I figured if this works out, it'd be a big help. She said, wow, you think we could ever meet him? I said, it's done. Forget it. Relax. Boom. Just you wait here, hon, okay? And I got up, and I went over, and I went, Frank, and he had the security guys, and he always called me Bullethead, and the guy said, Rickles is here, and he said, oh, what is it? He wants to talk to you. My pleasure. I said, Frank, if you could walk over, I know you're busy with these people, and just say hi, Don, it would help me a lot. He said, it's done, but don't come right away. And so I went back to the table. She said, what happened? Oh, I just chatted with him, sweetheart, don't worry. And we had another, to you, my darling, I had another drink, and boom. And with that, Sinatra walked over, and the violins are playing, and he walked over, and he said, Don, how are you? It's your old buddy, Frank Sinatra. And I went, not now, Frank. Can't you see I'm with somebody? And I stood up and did that loud, and the whole lounge stopped. The violin stopped. The waitresses stopped. Everything stopped. And the girl went into sugar shock. It resulted in good things for me.
I love that story. Also in the book, you talk about your days working the nightclubs in Miami Beach. And you describe a nightclub where you say they actually had rocking chairs in the audience?
Yeah, and surprisingly enough, when I say that, when I perform, I talk about it, and I say they had rocking chairs, and the audience would laugh. And I said, well, the punchline is, it was the fact. It wasn't something that they made fun of. It was that was the theme of the club. everybody sat in rocking chairs, and it sat about 100 people in rocking chairs. It was a great idea, and people got a kick out of it. And, of course, they had a big round bar, plus the customers sat in rocking chairs. And it was called Murray Franklin's, and that's where I worked at my very beginnings in Florida.
What was that like to perform? I mean, when people were restless, if you weren't going over well, did they rock more? Or
Dave, I never went over bad, Dave. Snap out of it, Dave. I never was lousy. The audience might be lousy, but I was never lousy. But it was very intimate, just almost like sitting in your house, and we had fun that way.
And then, of course, you had Frank Sinatra come to see you when he pretty much ran not only Miami but the world. And in the book, you credit your mom with making that connection. How did she do that?
Well, my mother was sort of a Jew Patton, as I said in the book. she was a very strong-minded lady, an American-born, in the sense that she knew what was going on. And Dolly Sinatra lived in the Fontainebleau at the time. That was a very major hotel. And my mother said, I want to get Sinatra to see you. I said, Ma, take it easy. She said, don't worry, dear. I know what to do. And she went up to Dolly Sinatra's house, apartment in the Fontainebleau, and said, Dolly, darling, because she knew Dolly, as I did. And she said, Dolly, would you get to see, she called me my sonny boy, would you get Frank to see my sonny boy, Don, and Murray Frank? And she said, Edda, it's done. It's done, darling. Don't worry. And sure enough, a few days later, in walked Frank with an army of people, and that was the beginning of our friendship.
And I know this is a familiar story, but one more I can't resist hearing as you tell it. What you said to Frank Sinatra from the stage when he was watching you perform that basically launched your career into a different level.
Well, for some reason, the press picked up on it right away and got all over Miami. I said, Frank, stand up, be yourself, hit somebody. And nobody ever talked to Frank like that. And in my style, which I take pride in, when I perform, I have a funny attitude, which is very important. And thank God, he laughed like crazy. And the guys with him went, Frank, we find that funny. Had they not, I would have been on the Jerry Lewis telethon.
When you were starting out as a stand-up comic, did you make a conscious decision not to work blue, or was that just the tenor of the times?
It was just never in my personality to do it. I never used any son of a bee is my biggest word on stage. I've never done that. And I don't know. People said, well, Rickles doesn't do that. And I really don't to this very day. I mean, you could take a young guy and see my show, and it's not something that they're going to say, oh, my God. I've never gone to that. Just it wasn't planned. It was just in my personality that I never thought of doing it that way.
You're widely known as an insult comic, but you don't even like that term.
And, no, I don't.
And why not? And what description suits you best?
Well, because people that don't know me, that have never seen me, think insult is somebody that's rude and mean. And I'm not mean-spirited, and I'm not rude. I have an attitude that's different than, I think, than anybody else. I know if somebody else tries what I do, I don't think that success will be very, very easy for them. I just happen to have a knack to be able to make fun of people without telling a joke and without hurting them. I don't think, again, though, on the other side of the coin, I don't think there's an entertainer in the world, a comedian especially, that somebody says, I don't like him. You can't, when you sell yourself, you can't win over everybody, mm-hmm. but you try to get the majority. And I've been blessed to be this far along at 81 years to headline to this very day, which I'm very proud of.
And are there things in your act that were okay for you to say decades ago in terms of the ethnic jokes that you make? You haven't had to change any of those through the times. You're okay with what you did then, what you're doing now, and the audience is okay with the way you're doing
them. David, they say politically incorrect. You know, what they say today is very strong. But after so many years of having this reputation that people accept me for my ethnic humor, mm-hmm. because I'm an established person, they know it's not somebody that came up Thursday and made up these things. They know my reputation, and they know how far and long I've been doing it, and I've been accepted.
A few things you don't clear up in your book that I'd like to ask you about.
Sure.
Where did the insult hockey puck come from?
Well, if I could clear that up, I would have said it. I have no, I can't really pin it down, David. To the best of my recollection, it started in these tough clubs that I was working when I had hecklers and so forth. And to shut them up, I would always say, don't be a hockey puck. And they laughed at that. And it worked. And even this day in New York, I'm a New Yorker. I was born and raised in New York. And so when I get back to New York, I walk down the street. And I'm very approachable, which is, you know, I've walked with Robert De Niro, a great fellow and a great actor. But guys like that and Clint Eastwood, people don't run up and say, hi, Clint, hi, Robert. Me, they come right up and they go, hey, Rickles, a hockey puck, how are you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But I have guys working on the buildings, you know, the hard hats. And I walk down the street and I go, hey, hockey puck, how are you? And it stuck with me.
Another thing that was a question that was raised in your book and not answered, why did the personalized bathrobe that Frank Sinatra gave to you have a rhino head on the back?
Well, knowing Frank, he was that kind of guy. He found that all the guys had in the steam room was like an intimate little club, and all the guys had bathrobes. Some had, I don't remember, but Sammy Davis, I think, had glasses on the back of his thing and back of his bathrobe, and what do you call it? Everybody that was in the room in those days, and Dean had something with a bottle of booze or something. And Frank, for somehow, he always looked at me and thought of me as a rhinoceros. And he always said, hey, give the rhino. So he put a rhino head on the back of my bathrobe. So that was the story. He got a kick out of it. I wasn't going to tell him he's wrong.
Okay. And then a couple of times in your book, you refer to Spider. I'm going to need some help here because I think it's a name for... What
take a wild guess, Dave.
I'm thinking a bodily organ.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's a great friend of mine.
And
he takes snaps and he wakes up and boom, he helped me give me two children. And he's a wonderful guy, and I'm very proud of him.
Well, and it just seems so odd to me. And you've put it in print, so I feel that it's okay to ask.
Oh, sure.
Where did Spider come from?
My sense of humor, I always used to, you know, I didn't want to say other words, and I thought Spider was kind of cute, and the audience responded to it, and I suddenly started talking. The beginning of my show, I said, oh, Spider's so tired tonight, I don't know what's the matter with him. And it tells the whole story right then and there, and the audience laughs. And again, I say, what the audience laughs at, I do. I keep in, so to speak.
We're talking with Don Rickles about his book, Rickles' Book. Here are some things I did learn from your book that I didn't know. As a young man, you took acting classes with Grace Kelly and Jason Robards.
And Tom Poston, who we just lost, rest his soul, and Conrad Bain, and oh my goodness, and Bancroft. Those were wonderful times, and I was accepted to the American Academy of Dramatic Arts and graduated from there, which a lot of people didn't know. And I was kind of proud of that. How I graduated and how I became part of that was unbelievable because I did the audition and they accepted me. And my background was not such that they would because all the people I knew in those days were dedicated and proved it to be dedicated actors and actresses. And I was a so-called comedian that was making fun of life and doing bad impressions. And the school took me and I was... so happy about that because it gave me a good solid background to know a little more about this business at the time.
The book in many places is a love letter to your mother. And,
yes, it is.
And I'm wondering how her support of you, not only when you were young and starting out, but what appears to be all through your life, translate to the way you've treated your own children and grandchildren.
You know, that was very sweet what you said. I got a little emotional when you said that. It was a love letter to my mother, so now that I think about it. And she was a great lady, a very domineering lady and a very possessive lady. She had those facts, but she had a great charm. She was very educated, and she was very supportive because as all actors are, David, trust me when I say that, I can say it for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
Every actor when he was a kid was shy. I really believe that, as I was. And my mother was my strength. Although at times she made me a little nutsy by saying, you know, do this, do that. In other words, we'd go into a restaurant when I gained a little fame and they would know me and I'd walk in and say, she said, darling, I know the maitre d'. Don't just stand over there. Charles, how are you? A table for my son and my friends. And she would be a takeover person.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to go, oh, my God, why'd she do that? But I found out as years and years went on that her strength was a great boost for me as a person and as a performer. And she lived through me. She really did. She was a frustrated performer herself, but never admitted to that. But she lived through me.
You were in Casino opposite Robert De Niro. And
yeah.
How did that offer from Martin Scorsese come to you?
Marty Scorsese, who's the best, and he somehow said Rickles would be perfect for Casino. And a lot of people didn't know it, but the part of Billy Sherbet was not in the original script. Marty wrote that in, and the joke was that Rickles played a mute. But everybody, because I didn't have much dialogue, but they said I was pretty damn good in it, and I was kind of happy to hear that. And Marty said, I want that presence. I said, Marty, I don't have a lot of dialogue. He said, but your presence, Don, your presence is going to be great. And he was very demonstrative about it. And sure enough, I got to be in Casino just because Scorsese reached out for me. And, of course, I had to meet Robert De Niro. He went through a cycle. He had to first go and sit with Marty and talk. Then you had to go and see De Niro. And I went over to his place at the Bel Air Hotel. And I said, Bob, I'm here to, I'm supposed to talk to you. And he said, okay, it was good to see you. And he mumbled, and that was it. And that was the beginning of our friendship.
Yeah, you tell a story in the book, I don't remember whether it was at rehearsal or during first day of filming, where you actually make fun of him, which, again, is sort of like Frank Sinatra all over again.
I did. They told me, David, they said, don't make fun of De Niro, Don, when you do it. Don't kid around. He's a very serious actor, and he likes to work very hard. I said, well, I do too, but, you know, just cool it with the kidding around. I said, okay, but I don't listen. That first day we were doing a scene, and he was... of course, we talked and so forth, but he walked and he said, we had the, what they call handheld camera, walking down the casino, and he went, you know, Don, it's so good, you know. I said, I can't, Marty. I can't work with a mumbler. I walk out. I don't need this. I got a lot of money, and I'm walking. I don't need it. Stop making a mumble, otherwise I walk. And he started to laugh, and that was broke the ice, and I kidded him ever since.
You dance around it or allude to it gently through most of your book, but at one point you actually acknowledge that mob connections simply were part of a successful Vegas nightclub career back then. Would you consider that a fair assessment?
Absolutely. I mean, when you say, you know, mob, they were great guys, and I didn't get involved into delving into what time they went to bed or what gun they had. It was nothing like that, but they were the guys that ran Vegas, and they were the guys that ran nightclubs, and... I was very, they were very kind to my mother and to me at the time. I was single then, and I knew a lot of them by first names, but I never delved into their personal life because I wanted to live. That's a joke.
Yeah, but, late on the laugh, but I got it,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but they were always great to me, and you needed them. Without them, the Copacabana in New York, I don't think I ever would have got to the Copa unless certain people made some calls and said, you got to put Rickles into the Copacabana. And that was a big shot for me to be in the Copacabana. My God, the headline there was a highlight of my career, really. One of my highlights.
Finally, I want to ask you about one other part of your book where you're actually very tender, and that's talking about your friendship with Bob Newhart. And you talk about traveling with Bob Newhart. We on Fresh Air have interviewed Bob Newhart, where he's given his side of your traveling stories. And here in the book, you talk about it as being like a tour of the Loudmouth and the Librarian.
Yeah.
what's the ongoing appeal of traveling with Bob?
Well, the basic thing is, first of all, as I say in my performance, the wives are key. He always laughs at getting the key. The wives are like sisters. They're very dear and close to each other. And had not Ginny and my wife Barbara been friends, I don't know if Bob and I ever would have gotten together. But that was the first secret. The two wives adored each other, and they said, let's work it out that Don and Bob meet. And in Vegas, and as they say in the book, we met and so forth and so on. But the basic thing is we both have, believe it or not, the same sense of humor when we're alone socially. On stage, it's apples and oranges. He does brain humor, and I do what I do. And so, and he's beautifully funny.
You do spider humor? Is that what you do?
You really hung up on that, aren't you, Dave? You like that. Are you married?
No, not anymore. Keep moving.
Oh,
nothing to
okay,
see here.
Well, okay. I was going to tell you, you have spider talk to
yeah.
him. anyway, Dave, we both have, to this day, the same basic values. I spent Christmas with him. He spends holidays. In fact, it was my birthday the other night, and just he and his wife, besides my immediate family, joined us. So we've always hit it off as family and as friends, and it's a great unwritten quality that we both have for each other.
How long have you known each other now?
Oh, my God, I'm married 42 years. Oh, about 35 years.
Well, that's amazing. What is it about you that allows you to claim as close friends not only Bob Newhart, you know, who's so quiet and shy, at least on stage, but Johnny Carson and Frank Sinatra, who could be so aloof and hard to approach?
Well, What can I tell you, Dave? It's my personality, and Frank, he always had a thing about me that was kind of warm and sweet, and Johnny got a kick out of me. So, and Johnny was a loner, and as David Letterman is, and I became good friends with David Letterman. Anyway, so I had good times with my personality. Just hit it off with him. What can I say?
You've said a lot, and it's in your book. So, Don Rickles, thank you very, very much for being on Fresh Air today.
Thank you, Dave, and I hope you'll read the book again.
Comedian Don Rickles. The 81-year-old entertainer's book of memoirs is called Rickles' Book.